My guest at this time is John Bolton, former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. He is now with the American Enterprise Institute. He joins me now to offer his expertise on the situation in Syria, now that U.S. intelligence has joined that of Israel, Britain, and France in suggesting that chemical weapons, in fact, have been used by the Assad regime in the protracted civil war in that country that is now claimed by most estimates north of 70,000 lives. And Mr. Ambassador, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me. Glad to be with you.
First of all, the intelligence that we're seeing, most of these countries are pretty convinced that this evidence is correct, but they're also pointing out that their evidence is relatively limited. What does that tell you?
Well, the fact is that the opposition forces do have a vested interest in trying to prove that the Assad regime has used chemical weapons. But there is ambiguity. Nonetheless, I think now that we have all of the U.S. intelligence agencies, albeit with varying degrees of confidence, thinking that chemical weapons have been used, the wiggle room for President Obama is getting very, very slim here with respect to the red line that he drew. You never have perfect intelligence in time of war. That's a fact of life. It's an unpleasant reality, but that's what presidents are for.
We'll get to your thoughts on what the proper U.S. policy ought to be, if in fact the intelligence is correct. But let's just talk about the fact that there was a red line, regardless of what it was. But in this case, it happened to be the use of weapons of mass destruction. Since the president did in fact use a red line, if he's in fact now backing off or rethinking where that red line ought to be, what message does that send not only to Syria, but the rest of the region and potentially the rest of the world?
Well, I think it's a big problem. I think that's why presidents should be very careful before they set red lines. In this case, there are a number of things you could say personally that I disagree with the president's red line, but leaving that aside, as you suggest, having set the red line, not to follow through on the implicit threat to do something when the Assad regime crosses the red line, is a terrible blow to the president's credibility, and even worse, to the United States itself. And I think it's unfortunate, but it fits a pattern for this president that he speaks in national security matters. He doesn't fully understand the implications of what he says. I'm trying to be charitable and diplomatic here. And then when he crashes into reality, that's when he begins to think through the implications of what he said, rather than thinking first and speaking later.
So what do you expect him to do now?
Well, honestly, I don't expect him to do much of anything. He has said so far he wants the United Nations to investigate. And, you know, as I said this morning in a Wall Street Journal article, there's about as much chance of the UN conducting a thorough investigation as there is of the Israeli National Symphony Orchestra conducting a thorough investigation in Syria. It's not going to happen. So if the president's trying to cover himself and, you know, give a reason why he didn't do anything, certainly throwing it to the United Nations is the perfect way out.
And then in terms of the policy, there's obviously a couple of different takes on this. You have the likes of Senator John McCain, who thinks we should have been involved in this in a much more significant way for a while now, whether it's with no-fly zones, more directly arming the rebels, or perhaps even boots on the ground. Senator McCaskill suggested boots on the ground should not be out of the question. On the other side, you say, well, you have a government in Syria that is obviously in lockstep with the mullahs and the radicals in Iran, and there's also inside the rebels a pretty significant faction of al-Qaeda, so why get involved when two sides that hate us are at war with each other?
Well, I think the way you answer a complex question like this is to say, what is America's fundamental interest here? What do we have at stake? How are we threatened by this situation? And the fact is, what we are really threatened by is the chemical weapons getting outside of Syria, falling into the hands of terrorists, whether al-Qaeda or others, who would then have the capability to use them worldwide against us, against our citizens, against our friends and allies. And preventing that from happening is a very vital national interest. So coming to the question, where would I have drawn the red line? I would have said those chemical weapons don't get outside of Syria. That would have been my red line. There's no doubt there's been a terrible humanitarian catastrophe inside Syria, 70,000 civilians dead already, surely more to follow. But the American interest is a lot more distant. And to put American service members' lives at risk purely for humanitarian purposes there when nobody else is stepping up to the plate. Nobody else is volunteering to do anything about it. I don't think is warranted. And I think even in the case of the chemical weapons, the unlimited commitment that the president made in his red line to stop them from being used was far too broad. And balancing the risk to our service members versus the American interest involved, I don't see it. I do see it, as I said, in trying to stop these weapons from falling into the hands of terrorists and getting outside of Syria. That's where I would draw the line. That's where I would use military force.
What type of commitment would be required to make sure that didn't happen?
Well, I think it's unavoidable that you'd have to put special operations forces on the ground. I think a lot of it we could do from the air and from space in terms of monitoring the chemical weapons and making sure they don't leave the country. That's one operational advantage of a more limited red line, that it's not just moving anywhere in Syria, it's heading for the borders. But this is very dangerous stuff. It's very dangerous stuff. And, you know, just imagine if you attacked a chemical weapons arsenal from the air and blew it up, you'd basically be releasing the chemical weapons into the atmosphere, which is why the risk is it requires putting special operations forces in to seize the chemical weapons or to destroy them in place. It's a very, very dangerous mission, and that's why just a general mission to prevent their use entirely, I think, is far too risky.
We're talking with former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, and he had just left the ambassador's position when the Israelis struck the nuclear site that the Syrians were building. I believe that was in 2007. What did we know then about their chemical weapons capabilities? Are these weapons they developed on their own? Some folks are saying these are the weapons we never found in Iraq. What do you know about
them? Well, we do know that even back before the Israelis destroyed that nuclear reactor in September of 07, that Syria did have a chemical, and we believed a biological weapons program. We didn't know a lot about it. We didn't know a lot about their nuclear activities. In fact, the Israelis basically brought that reactor to our attention. So it is possible that that some of Saddam Hussein's chemical weapons did in fact make it into Syria. You know, we had reports of Saddam's chemical weapons moving towards Syria in 2003. They could never be verified. But so we don't know the answer to the question, but it wouldn't surprise me. And if that's true, obviously we also don't know the quantity, the magnitude of the chemical weapons supplies that Assad has.
You mentioned that you don't expect the U.S. to do much of anything, and so far the international community, quote-unquote, has done very little on this issue. So how do you expect this to ultimately play out? A lot of advisors seem to think that ultimately Assad's going to end up like Gaddafi, and it's just a matter of time, although if there are enough of these WMD, obviously that could certainly change the tide. What kind of timetable, what kind of outcome are you looking at here?
You know, this civil war in Syria has now been going on for more than 2 years. So Assad has shown remarkable staying power. I think a lot of people did think he would be gone well before now. Obviously, he's not. His forces are still, in fact, carrying out offensives against the rebels. And if he thinks that he has gotten away with a limited use of chemical weapons, he may think he can up the ante a little bit and use a little bit more. I would have thought that the chemical weapons were sort of his last-ditch protection when he thought the regime was about to go under. But he may have been testing the United States and the West, and so far at least he's found that the test is going very well from his point of view. So I think the Iranians, the Russians, have a vested interest in trying to keep Assad in power, and I'm afraid the gloomy prediction is this civil war is going to go on for quite some time.
As long as the weapons of mass destruction don't get out of Syria and into the hands of people who could do us or some of our allies great harm, do we have a vested interest in who wins this?
Well, there are no white hats, I'm afraid. I have nothing good to say about Assad. He is, you indicated earlier, basically a satellite of the Ayatollahs in Tehran. But unfortunately, the opposition, basically from the beginning, has been shot through with terrorists and radical Islamicists. I've been waiting for 2 years for the people who have been saying we should arm or assist the opposition to name the opposition leaders who would adhere to Western values, who would be in favor of representative government against conducting a bloodbath if they won. I still don't know who those opposition leaders are. And I think it would be a big mistake for the United States or the West as a whole to give weapons and capabilities to people we don't know and don't have any basis to trust.
Mr. Ambassador, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, now with the American Enterprise Institute. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.